This is episode 626 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life so you can love your people, get prepared, and live free. On today's podcast, we're discussing the coronavirus and the prepper's response. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is usually an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website. But from time to time, I share information to the preparedness community, which can bring a ton of value and information. Links for this podcast can be found in the show notes or on the Prepper Website podcast.com. Hey guys, this episode is sponsored by the exclusive Prepper Website email group, which allows you to communicate with other preppers right from your email. You don't have to worry about your every link, click, or word being tracked by social media. This email group resides on the same servers as Prepper Website. So for more information, you can visit PrepperWebsite.net or you can click the link in the show notes. All right, guys, let's go ahead and jump into this podcast because I want to talk a little bit about the coronavirus. I know that I've been talking about it here, you know, on the last couple of episodes, but I want to talk a little bit more about it, maybe take a little bit deeper dive. And I really want to talk about, I want to end up with the prepper's response. And I know a lot of people, if you're listening to other preparedness podcasts and other podcasts out there, they've covered this and they've done it in a lot of detail. So I don't want to try to rehash everything that's out there, but I want to talk about some things that I've seen and just things that I've shared. And I even share this stuff at church today. So those of you that are new, maybe to the podcast, you don't realize that I record this podcast on Sunday evening. And so I do this to have the podcast ready for you on Monday morning. If you want to listen to it on your commute to work or whatever, it's there available for you. And so, you know, when I talk about church, usually church has been the morning of. And so I just, you know, just there's some things that I wanted to share that I shared with the church and things that I want to share with you as well. So let's go ahead and get started. The coronavirus. So I know that we've been calling it the coronavirus, but really the virus itself is called SARS-CoV-2. And so that is the virus. That's the official name of the virus. The disease that you get from that virus is called COVID-19. And I saw a funny meme on, I can't remember where I saw it, probably on Twitter, because that's pretty much where I spend most of my time if I'm going to social media, because I'm getting a lot of my news from there. But it was something along the lines as Corona is offering $1 million to anyone who can get the virus name changed from coronavirus to like the Bud Light virus. And so I thought that was kind of funny. You know, they're getting a lot of negative press. Now, it's kind of funny, but it's not funny. I mean, this coronavirus has brought out so many different memes and different things out there. But really, it's not funny. And I want to talk a little bit about that. It's not just the flu. I know there's a lot of people saying that it's just the flu. It's you know, it's not going to be as bad. It's just as bad as the flu. People get the flu all the time. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'll go into that in just a little bit. And yes, it will be very similar to the flu as far as most of the people that get infected by it. But there's a lot more to it that people aren't thinking about. When people just say it's just like the flu, they're not looking at the greater picture. They're just looking at the virus itself and the symptoms that people might come down with. So current situation here. Earlier this morning when I talked about this in church, in the United States, we were at like 400 and I think 37. Now we're at 537 at the time of this recording, when I am recording this, of current people that are infected. In my area, in the Houston area, there are 5 in Harris County and 6 in Fort Bend, and that has changed as well. Fort Bend is just, we're talking about maybe 20 minutes over. I mean, Harris County, Fort Bend County bump up right against to each other, and you wouldn't even realize that you're crossing over counties if it wasn't for that little sign. And even sometimes you don't even realize you're passing it. But they had 3 for the last couple of days, and they've jumped up to 6. The thing is that when we're talking about this coronavirus, what we are seeing is a lot of reaction instead of being proactive. And we're being reactive versus proactive. There is, I'm going to reference a couple of guys here that I try to watch every single day. So Dr. John Campbell and Chris Martinson over at Peak Prosperity. I have their videos. They're pretty much putting out videos every single day and just keeping people updated and giving great information. Dr. Campbell is a professor out of the UK, and I think he's doing a great job of explaining infection. He goes into a lot of other details and not just reporting on what is happening around there. And then Chris Martinson has been talking about this for a long time. And one of the things that is important that he's been saying, although he's been covering it for a long time, he's talking about the exponential growth of the virus and how that happens. And I think that's very important. So a lot of people have been reactive versus proactive, including our government, it seems like. So I've mentioned before, look at China, look at how they responded. They are a communist government. And they are, you know, they're going to do what they need to do to be able to protect themselves. And so when you look at what they did, they locked down Wuhan, which again is a city. And this is not anything new for you that if you've been listening to the last couple of episodes, Wuhan is a city bigger than New York City. It has 11 million people. They locked that down right away. And then they went on to lock down a whole bunch of other cities. So don't necessarily listen to the words that they're saying. Look at the actions that they're taking. They thought that it would be important to lock down cities and to not let people move because they needed to contain this virus and keep people from moving around to continue to spread it. And I think that's very important. As I'm recording this last night or early this morning, Italy locked down the Lombardy area of Italy. And so if you go to the Drudge Report, it'll tell you like a quarter of the population of Italy right now is locked down because for whatever reason, they have not taken the steps to control what is going on. And so it is just on a rampage there. The coronavirus is on a rampage when what is very scary is there's a lot of older people there in Italy. And so that's a really scary thing. We're seeing numbers just really go up exponentially when they start releasing the data that's out there. Here in the US, when we're talking about what is happening here, the US is not trying to control this thing either. So the US is still allowing people just to come into the country without really asking them, hey, where have you been? Even if they're traveling from an area that is known that the coronavirus is there. And there's many, many accounts on Twitter of people is like, man, I just got to, you know, LAX and I walked in and no one asked me any questions about where I went right through customs and no one asked any questions at all. And, you know, that's kind of concerning because people are coming in and you can grab this virus and you can be asymptomatic. You're not showing signs of it or anything like that. And, you know, it just would be smart to be tracking people a little bit, I would think, but they're not even doing that at all. When you look into this and you start reading accounts of people that are out there, we're not really testing. Again, I'm going to cite the Drudge Report, but there's been less than 1,600 tests given at this time. And so a lot of that was the tests that were created they had some serious faults. And listening to Chris Martinson, he was talking about how when they started ramping up the test, that they tried to have the bright idea to not only test for this new SARS-CoV-2, but to also test for SARS and also test for MERS. So they tried to have three tests in one, and there was a flaw in it, which, you know, causes all those tests to be invalid. So now they're trying to ramp up production of this test that's just solely looking at SARS-CoV-2, and they're sending this out, but it's very, very limited. And we're hearing about people that are concerned and they're having, you know, breathing issues, but they're not being tested. And so they'll call the emergency room. The emergency room says, hey, don't come here. Go to an emergency clinic. And the emergency clinic says, don't come here. Wait, you know, hang out until it gets very serious. And if it gets very serious, well, then you need to come into the hospital. And that's scary for someone who feels like they might have this thing. So there are, you know, we're not getting the test out there. People are out there and they're not sure of, you know, if they're spreading it or not. It's out there. It's kind of scary. One of the pictures that I've seen on Twitter is the way that South Korea is really dealing with this. And I thought it was really smart. They have drive-through tests, testing areas. And so they have people that are all decked out in their PPE and everything, right? Their personal protective equipment. And so people, if they think they have the virus, they will roll up. They will take their temperature, take their information, do the swab, do all of that stuff that they need to, and then go ahead and process that test. And then if they do have it, they let them know over the phone and say, hey, you do have it. You need to self-quarantine or self-isolate. And then if things happen, well, then you need to go ahead and come in. And so with all of these things, the United States is not really managing the spread very well. Again, like I said, you can be asymptomatic. You don't have any kind of symptoms at all. You know, with the flu, you're spreading the infection when you have symptoms, right? When you have fever, by that time you feel like junk, you're laying down, you're getting meds, you're doing all that kind of stuff. With this virus, you don't feel anything at all. And some people, 80% of the people that get this aren't going to feel a whole lot. It might be the flu. It might be the cold. It might be, I don't know, you might feel like you have allergies. I don't know. And so you really don't know, what you have. You don't really realize that you have this virus and you're spreading it all over the place. And then there's the aspect of it's an aerosol spread. It's droplets or whatever. So there's the one account of the woman that went to California, was in a hospital in California, and the first hospital that they were at weren't taking any precautions. And then they realized, okay, this is serious. So they went to a more secure hospital and they started implementing the droplet precautions. And then even at that, it's still not, just droplet precautions, it's aerosol. And so it can spread that way. And then you have this idea of it can be, anywhere between 5 to 14 days of dormancy before it actually starts. You start to feel the symptoms. And even at that, there are some people that have even like more like 21, maybe, and it's been said maybe even 24 or 27 days. And so, when you start taking all this stuff into account, you realize, we've kind of failed. I mean, people are already saying we've already failed at containing this. Now we've moved to mitigation. And again, I'm not talking about your mainstream media. I'm not talking about the 10 o'clock news. I'm not even talking about Fox News or CNN or anything like that. I'm looking at people who are infectious disease experts and, from John Hopkins and other people that are out there that are sharing this information. And it's like, okay, it's time to move to mitigation because we've kind of lost the ability to isolate now. And the thing is that all over the country, people are starting to get the hint and they're starting to realize this. So there have been conferences, a lot of conferences that have been canceled, big conferences. I was talking with an administrator in my school district who was supposed to, we're in spring break this week, and was supposed to be going to two conferences. And one he was going to use as a conference and also like a family vacation that he was going to use as that way. The one conference on the West Coast, well, they sent out word this week or last week, I guess, that they were going to, if you were presenting, then you can, they'll move your presentation to next year and then they're going to fully be online. And the same thing happened to the other one on the East Coast. And, he wanted to make sure that he could get online and use the laptop that he was using to be able to connect with Zoom, which is a WebEx and Google Hangouts or whatever. So you're able to connect with other people and listen to what the seminar or the conference is going to be about. He wanted to make sure that he could do it. But a lot of conferences, again, are canceling or they are strictly being done online. Here in the Austin in Texas, South by Southwest was canceled, and that's a big deal, and especially when they started losing Google and Twitter and Facebook and people started pulling out of it. but not to mention the fact that people come from all over the place and they descend on Austin to participate in this event. And what I think is a little concerning is that you have the Houston Rodeo is going on right now, and they put out a message that said, we're not canceling, something like South by Southwest. People come from all over the country. The Houston Rodeo is mostly attended by people that are local. Well, I mean, we've got it here as well. Again, we don't know who all has it. We don't know to what extent because there's not tests being done. But you have universities that are canceling the face-to-face classes and they are going completely online. I mean, this is happening all over the world, but it's happening here in the United States as well. Some big tech companies like Twitter and Google have told their people, and Facebook have told their people, if you can work from home, don't come in. Stay home, work from home. You can do it all there. And then you have people that are panicking. You have stores that I've seen pictures and video of the West Coast where people are lined up to get into Costco. TP is flying off the shelves, right? And I always joke about TP. It's a joke. I think it's one of those things that I always joke about, but people really take that into consideration. Again, I always look back at what happened with Venezuela. In Venezuela, the things that started to get pulled off the shelves first were like baby diapers, and then women's feminine hygiene products, and then toilet paper, and then boom, it really went downhill very, very fast. And so people just, they don't like the idea. There's a lot of people criticizing other people for buying TP. I mean, can you really criticize someone for not wanting to wipe their butt with leaves or other things out there or newspaper when you can have some toilet paper? I mean, come on. So, that's flying off the shelves. People are really buying that. I kind of understand that. I think that you need to have food. I think food is important, all that kind of stuff. But if you can have a little bit of extra toilet paper, yeah, get some toilet paper. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, or unless you are new to this podcast and you're looking for information, I mean, most of y'all understand that we're prepared. We have a little put back. And so we understand the importance of that. But I don't want to criticize someone out there because they don't have a big stock of toilet paper and they are wanting to have a little bit more in case things run out. I talked with someone this week and I was talking about, hey, think about having some extra food at home and think about having some extra hygiene products at home just in case, because if you don't need it, you're still going to use it. And I asked them, how often do you go to the store? And she told me, I go every day. And I'm like, you go every day to the grocery store? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, that's, I guess she stops on her way home from work. And that, to me, that's crazy. Not only is it a waste of time, but it's also a waste of money because you're not buying items that can be used. You can spread it out over a couple of days or whatever. One of the things that is flying off the shelves again is water. And that's hard to understand, at least from my point of view. I know from a general preparedness aspect, you definitely need to have water. So I'm not making any bones about that. But talking specifically about this coronavirus thing, if we are not getting water out of our tap, we have more serious issues than just the coronavirus to be thinking about. So, but there's people that are, because they're not coming from a preparedness standpoint, because they're not, maybe they start to panic, they are thinking about, okay, what do I need? And they're thinking about the apocalypse. They're thinking about zombies. They're thinking about, I don't know, their only point of reference maybe is like preparing for a hurricane or, a blizzard or something along those lines, because they just have no, they really have no visibility on this. And again, those of us that are in preparedness really need to be careful about how we criticize other people out there, because people are trying to get prepared. Now, of course, they're running to the store and they are panicked and they're freaking out, but at least they realize they need to have some stuff. And so, yes, again, preppers, we have some stuff put back so that we don't have to panic and we don't have to freak out in times like this. So I think that's, that's one of those things that we need to be careful of when we're watching the news and we're watching people talk about, you know, what's going on out there on social media. There's a lot of criticism out there, and I don't think it's good. What I want to share with you is I want to share with you a thread that I bookmarked on Twitter. And the person that that I'm going to read this from, her name is Liz Specht. I shared this at church, and even Chris Martinson, after I had bookmarked it and I knew that I was using this for my message, I knew that I was going to use it here for my for the podcast, I saw him do it on his video, and so I thought it was pretty interesting because she talks a little bit about the things that we're not always talking about, that yes, the flu, but there's bigger things here that we need to consider. And so just to give you a little bit of idea of who Liz Specht is she's an associate director of science and technology at Good Food Institute. And from the Twitter handle, it looks like they do alternative proteins for sustainable food future. And I don't know what that means. Maybe it's like plant-based protein. I have no idea about that. But I guess she has on her Twitter handle, she's University of California, San Diego. She's a PhD, John Hopkins University, and she's a chemical biomolecular engineer. So I want to read this thread here. It's going to be kind of long, but I want to read this to you because I think it's important to get a grasp at this is not just about the virus, the sickness itself. There's more to it than that. So let me go ahead and jump over here, and I'm going to read it. And I'm going to link to this also in the show notes so that if you want to go and look at it or maybe share it out, you can share it out as well. So let me go ahead and read this or start reading this thread. I think most people aren't aware of the risk of systemic healthcare failure due to COVID-19 because they simply haven't run the numbers yet. So let's talk math. Let's conservatively assume that there are 2,000 current cases in the U.S. today, March 6th. This is about 8 times the number of confirmed or lab diagnosed cases. We know there is substantial underdiagnosis due to lack of test kits. I'll address implications later of under or overestimate. We can expect that we'll continue to see a doubling of cases every 6 days. This is a typical doubling time across several epidemiological studies. Here I mean actual cases. Confirmed cases may appear to rise faster in the short term due to new test kit rollout. We're looking at about 1 million U.S. cases by the end of April, 2 million by May 5th, 4 million by May 11th, and so on. Exponentials are hard to grasp, but this is how they go. Again, listen, exponentials are hard to grasp, but this is how they go. As the healthcare system begins to saturate under this caseload, it will become increasingly hard to detect, track, and contain new transmission chains. In absence of extreme interventions, this likely won't slow significantly until hitting less than or greater than 1% of susceptible population. What does a caseload of this size mean for healthcare system? We'll examine just 2 factors, hospital beds and masks, among many, many other things that will be impacted. The U.S. has about 2.8 hospital beds per 1,000 people. With a population of 330 million, this is 1 million beds. At any given time, 65% of those beds are already occupied. That leaves about 330,000 beds available nationwide, perhaps a bit fewer this time of year with regular flu season, etc. All right, let me break in here. Guys, on top of this, right, the flu is bad. When you look at the flu map at the CDC, like everything is, you know, it's like hardcore bad, right? It's the highest level it can be. So on top of coronavirus, you have the flu. And then, you know, down here in the Houston area, pollen is going crazy. And so it's, our cars are looking green instead of whatever color they are because there's so much pollen in the air. And that's affecting people with allergies and people who are, you know, have asthma and different things like that are dealing with that. So you have all of that. So let me continue on. So let's trust Italy's numbers and assume that about 10% of cases are serious enough to require hospitalization. Keep in mind that for many patients, hospitalization lasts for weeks. In other words, turnover will be very slow as beds fill with COVID-19 patients. By this estimate, by about May 8th, all open hospital beds in the U.S. will be filled. This says nothing, of course, about whether these beds are suitable for isolation of patients with a highly infectious virus. If we're wrong by a factor of 2 regarding the fraction of severe cases, that only changes the timeline of bed saturation by 6 days in either direction. If 20% of cases require hospitalization, we run out of beds by May 2nd. If only 5% of cases require it, we can make it until May 14th. 2.5 gets us to May 20th. This, of course, assumes that there is no uptick in demand for beds from other non-COVID-19 causes, which seems like a dubious assumption. As healthcare systems become increasingly burdened, the RX shortages, etc., people with chronic conditions that are normally well-managed may find themselves slipping into severe states of medical distress, requiring intensive care and hospitalization. But let's ignore that for now. All right, so that's beds. Now masks. Feds say that we have a national stockpile of 12 million N95 masks and 30 million surgical masks, which are not ideal, but better than nothing. There are about 18 million healthcare workers in the U.S. Let's assume only 6 million healthcare workers are working on any given day. This is likely an underestimate, as most people work most days of the week. But again, I'm playing conservative at every turn. As COVID-19 cases saturate virtually every state and county, which seems likely to happen any day now, it will soon be irresponsible for all healthcare workers to not wear a mask. These healthcare workers would burn through N95 stockpiles in 2 days if each healthcare worker only got one mask per day. One per day would be neither sanitary nor pragmatic, though this is indeed what we saw in Wuhan, with healthcare workers collapsing on their shift from dehydration because they were trying to avoid changing their PPE suits as they cannot be reused. How quickly could we ramp up production of new masks? Not very fast at all. The vast majority are manufactured overseas, almost all in China. Even when manufactured here in U.S., the raw materials are predominantly from overseas, again, predominantly from China. Keep in mind that all countries globally will be going through the exact same crisis and shortages simultaneously. We can't force trade in our favor. Now consider how these two factors, bed and mask shortages, compound each other's severity. Full hospitals plus few masks plus healthcare workers running around between beds without proper PPE equals a very bad mix. Healthcare workers are already getting infected even with access to full PPE. In the face of PPE limitations this severe, it's only a matter of time. Healthcare workers will start dropping from the workforce for weeks at a time, leading to a shortage of healthcare workers that then further compounds both issues above. We could go on and on about thousands of factors of ventilators or even simple things like saline drip bags. You see where this is going. Importantly, I cannot stress this enough. Even if I'm wrong, even very wrong, about core assumptions like percentages of severe cases or current case numbers, it only changes the timeline by days or weeks. This is how exponential growth in an immunologically naive population works. Undeserved panic does no one any good, but neither does ill-informed complacency. It's wrong to assuage the public by saying only 2% will die. People aren't adequately grasping the national and global systemic burden wrought by this swift moving of a disease. Again, let me say that again. People aren't adequately grasping the national and global systemic burden wrought by this swift moving of a disease. I'm an engineer. This is what my mind does all day. I run back of the envelope calculations to try to estimate order of magnitude impacts. I've been on high alarm about this disease since January 19th, after reading clinical indicators in the first papers emerging from Wuhan. Nothing in the last 6 weeks has dampened my alarm in the slightest. To the contrary, we're seeing abject refusal of many countries to adequately respond or prepare. Of course, some of these estimates will be wrong, even substantially wrong, but I have no reason to think they'll be orders of magnitude wrong. Even if your personal risk of death is very, very low, don't mock decisions like canceling events or closing workplaces as undue panic. These measures are the bare minimum we should be doing to try to shift the peak to slow the rise in case so that healthcare systems are less overwhelmed. Each day that we can delay an extra case is a big win for the healthcare system. And yes, you really should prepare to buckle down for a bit. All services and supply chains will be impacted. Why risk the stress of being ill-prepared? Worst case, I'm massively wrong, and you now have a huge bag of rice and black beans to burn through over the next few months and enough Robitussin to trip out. One more thought. You've probably seen multiple respected epidemiologists have estimated that 20 to 70% of the world will be infected within the next year. If you use 6-day doubling rates I mentioned above, we land at 2 to 6 billion infected by sometime in July of this year. Obviously, I think the doubling time will start to slow down once sizable fractions of the population have been infected, simply because of herd immunity and a small susceptible population. But take the scenario above, full beds, no PPE, etc., as just 1% of the U.S. population infected, and stretch them out over just a couple of extra months. That timeline roughly fits with consensus in-game numbers from these highly esteemed epidemiologists. Again, we're talking about discrepancies of mere days or weeks, one direction or another, but not disagreements in the overall magnitude of the challenge. This is not some hypothetical, fear-mongering, worst-case scenario. This is reality as far as anyone can tell with the current available data. That's all for now. Standard disclaimers apply. I'm a PhD biologist, but not an epidemiologist. Thoughts are my own, yada yada. Stay safe out there. All right, so that's that thread, and it's a long thread for Twitter when you're talking about all of those things. But you get the idea when you start running the numbers and you start talking about how that goes. Again, we don't see this impact yet. We don't see the numbers. People are looking at the numbers and they're seeing them go up gradually right now because we're not testing. But when that testing starts, we're going to see these numbers really, really go up. So I want to talk a little bit about some major impacts that we're going to be dealing with, all right? And so the first one is this. So we're going to be dealing with the virus itself. So again, 80%, they keep saying 80% of the people that get this virus, it's going to be like the flu or less. It's no big deal, right? We understand that. They say anywhere between 10 to 15% of the people are going to require hospitalization. So they're going to need to go into and take up a bed, kind of like the Twitter thread that we just read by Liz Speck, that they're going to need a hospital bed, which there's not a lot there. And when you're talking about 10 to 15% of the people that get infected, when you're talking about 327 million in the United States, that's a lot of people. Then there's anywhere between 5 to 10% of people are going to require critical care. Critical care means you're in a critical care unit, you have a ventilator, and I think it was Lisa Bedford who shared that there's only 64,000 ventilators in the United States when you think about that, all right? So kind of put that in your head. Now, Liz Speck in her thread said that there's 1 million beds. I was listening to the War Room Pandemic by Steve Bannon, has been talking about this for a while now. And he had an expert, he had a doctor from Johns Hopkins talk about how many beds are they available. And there are, he said, 100 beds that are able to take someone with that can deal with the serious nature of this, right? 100,000 beds, 30,000 beds could be reconfigured, right? Rooms can be reconfigured and they can do makeshift kind of things to be able to handle this. But we're only talking about 130,000 beds. That's not a lot when we're talking about that. Now, those that are most susceptible to this virus are those who are older and those who are already dealing with a secondary illness, like diabetes. Maybe you're dealing, I don't know, maybe dialysis. I'm not a doctor, right? So the disclaimer and all that stuff. You're dealing with cardiovascular disease. Maybe you are on chemo and your immune system is down. And so, again, we'd say most people that get this is just going to be the flu. Young people, they say young people are not getting it. You know, those under 18, there's very few people under 18 who are really getting this virus. But here's the deal. They can still carry it. And so I want you to think about this. Those people that say it's just the flu are not taking this into consideration. Now, if their worldview is they live in an area and it's just them and their kids and that's it, and maybe every other family member lives somewhere else in the United States and it's just them, and they might not have a lot to worry about. But let's just say someone like me who lives in the city and everybody, or lives in, you know, a big city like the Houston area, and all my family is here. So let's say little Billy goes to school and gets coronavirus from somebody for however it's just been spreading around and rampant in the schools, and they wind up getting it. They come home, no big deal, little cough, little cold, maybe get some Robitussin like Liz Speck talked about. But then the grandparents come over to visit, right? And then the grandparents wind up getting it because little Billy, you know, this is, hey, just like a little cold, little, you know, ear infection, little normal what kids get. But the grandparents get it, and it really does affect them. I don't know about you, but when people say, you know, older people are dying from this, I'm not ready to let older people die from that. I mean, I don't want older people to die from this. I don't want people that, you know, that are, you know, my parents or, you know, my in-laws or people that I know that I work with that might have a secondary type illness that we really don't know about. Maybe they're getting, I don't know, maybe they're getting chemo or whatever they're getting. We don't want that on top of everything else that's going on. And so when people just say it's just the flu, you're not thinking about all the other people out there that could possibly be hurt by this. Not only the sickness and all of that, but people that, can you imagine if, you know, they get sick and you know, something worse happens, or they go into the hospital or even they die? I mean, that's not, to me, that's not acceptable. So when people just throw around so easily, it's just like the flu. They're not taking into account all the other things. Guys, there's 327 million people in the United States. Out of that, 46.2 million are 65 and older. That's a lot of people. 46.2 million people in the United States. I'm just talking about the United States right now. I know there's a lot of people listening from other countries, but I just went and researched the numbers here in the United States. 46.2 million people are 65 and older. And so when we just say it's just the flu, there are some things that, some ramifications here that we need to think outside of just ourselves, right? The other thing that we need to talk about, which Liz Speck talked already, is the overwhelm of our medical system. Now, I shared that number with you already of that doctor from Johns Hopkins that said, you know, 100,000 beds that can really deal with, you know, critical nature of people being sick, and then, you know, maybe another 30,000. So think about, you know, things are ramping up. We really should put something in place like South Korea did. Like, if you think you have the, instead of sending these, you know, instead of sending the test kits to hospitals and clinics where people are going to go, set up places where people can go and do this drive-by like South Korea is doing. That way you don't wind up inundating, you know, hospitals and emergency rooms and emergency clinics with people that are sick. I don't know why something like this isn't being done. And I would hope and say, like, maybe the different counties, the people that were a little bit smarter. The thing is that there's people that out there that are giving up. I mean, there are people out there, and I want to say it's Evergreen Healthcare or whatever. They put out a thing, it was on Twitter, and they put out a thing that said that they're going to stop testing for the virus because in conjunction with the CDC, they agree that it's endemic in the community. And so why even test? I mean, that's, to me, that's irresponsible. Now, they put that up there on their website. They got a lot of backlash and they took it down very quickly because, you know, that's just not the right attitude to have. Let's try to separate people as much as possible so that we can protect our healthcare, because we're going to have people, you're still going to have people that are sick because of some other thing. They're still going to have people that, there's people out there that are going to have heart attacks. There's people that are going to break their bones. There's people that are going to, you know, need chemo. There's people that are, you know, all the different things that happen in life, you know, and we need to make sure that those people are able to be serviced. So if we were smart, if our leaders were smart, if our government leaders were smart, they'd find ways to say, hey, let's kind of set this up. People can do the drive-through. We can make sure people have their, all, you know, the doctors, the healthcare workers that are out there are all protected, and that we can do it this way to protect our hospitals and our healthcare system from being overwhelmed and overrun. But again, elective surgeries are going to need to be canceled when things start becoming overwhelmed. And if you do have an emergency, that means that you're going to go to a hospital that could be, you know, that could have a lot of virus and a lot of sickness there. Again, it's, people are asymptomatic and they're walking around and it's just crazy like that. My cousin sent me a picture that one of his fraternity brothers sent him, and he has health issues, and so he went to the doctor, and right there on the front door it says coronavirus warning. If you think you have coronavirus, do not come in here. And you know, it's like, you know, go to an emergency room or blah blah blah. And because they were like, we want to protect our environment. Now again, it's going to be very hard to be able to do that when people are asymptomatic, but people are already putting that warning up there, because if you go and you're spreading this through aerosol and it's out there, I mean, people can get infected. And you take doctors out of the game, you take healthcare workers out of the game, you take first responders, those first responders that went into that nursing home in Kirkland, and you know, they went in there and they weren't wearing protective equipment. And so a lot of them are isolated. A lot of the people in that nursing home, a lot of the older nursing home patients, they are getting it. And so that's just we don't need to be there if we're just smarter and we take care of this. So I was reading on Twitter, I can't remember, so I'm just saying this, I can't quote exactly who it was, but there was and maybe it might have been someone quoting the CDC, I'm not 100% sure, so don't hold me to it. But they've talked about that we are past the containment phase, and now we're in the mitigation phase, because we can't contain this anymore. We can't contain it to one state or, you know, one geographic area. Now it's like it's everywhere. So now we need to deal with how are we going to try to lessen the spread. So like, again, like Liz Specht said in her Twitter thread, is so that we can lessen the impact on our healthcare system, so that we're not overwhelming it. So the more that we can not overwhelm that, the more that people need healthcare, they can get that. Another thing that we need to think about, that people, when they start talking about and they're saying it's just the flu, or hey, this is no big deal, they're not thinking about the global supply chain. So I've mentioned this already before. So again, you know, please excuse me if you've heard this before on other episodes that I have mentioned this before. But a lot of the starting pieces of our pharmaceutical, and I'm not talking about the finished product, but the substances that get it started, start in China. And so they start in China, they get, you know, the substances are packaged in a way that they can be shipped out, and other, you know, the pharmaceuticals can be finished. So we're going to have an issue with that. The global supply chain is going to feel a big slowdown in medicines that a lot of people need. And they, you know, just the regular medicines that they take for regular issues that they have. Now, I know in the preparedness community, we try to talk about, you know, what can we do to not be on medicine? I know that I've gone to the doctor before when they've tried to put me on medicine, you know, it's like, hey, this is a daily medicine that you need to take. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to deal with it in other ways. And a lot of us in the preparedness community are like that, but there's still a lot of people that are out there that are taking, you know, medicine that they need for whatever, a secondary situation that they're dealing with, right? Did you hear that China and India both have stopped exports of important medicines so that they can take care of their population first? Malaysia and Germany have mentioned that they will stop exporting masks. And that's understandable that a country will want to take care of their own people first. But we have gotten to this point here where, you know, globalism is great for those people in power. You know, those people that are in power, those people that have money, they're going to be taken care of no matter what. But globalism has moved things to where things are cheaper. So now we don't have anything, you know, here in America where we're making stuff, where we're manufacturing stuff. We got a lot of smart people. We've got, you know, a lot of big, great ideas that, you know, permeate the world come from the United States. But as far as being dependent on other people, that's not smart. You know, as preppers or those that are a little bit more self-reliant, we understand what being self-reliant is. And so the government doesn't understand that. They haven't become self-reliant. In a situation like this, they're depending on other places that are making masks and personal protective equipment and medicines and things like that. And so when, you know, this globalism that has really taken over, you kind of understand where it's like, wait a minute, we need to focus on our people too. And we need to focus to make sure that we're able to take care of our people. And so there's going to be disruptions in the global supply chain. You're not hearing about that unless you are going and looking for that. They're not talking about that on the news. They're still, I mean, when I go to mainstream media and I just pop in there to see what's going on, they're still talking about Biden. They're still talking about, the primaries and Bernie and all that kind of stuff. And they're not talking about this aspect of it. And I understand, because people, they don't want to cause panic, right? They start hearing, hey, there's going to be this, or we're not going to have this, and toilet paper, and everybody starts running to the store, and there's runs of all this stuff. And we don't want to see fights, and we don't want, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. We don't want that going on right now every single day, because people are going to the stores trying to freak out. So I understand that you don't want to instill panic in people. But the fact is that we're going to have disruption, and that's just the meta. I just talked about pharmaceuticals and medicine and masks and different things like that. All the other things as well, electronics and everything else that comes from China. It just seems like everything comes from China. The other thing that is going to be disrupted is the economy. Now, if you've been following the economy, we don't live our lives according to the Dow Jones and the Dow Jones going up and down, but it has been very volatile. And so it has been going down, and there's been some big crashes. We saw two Fridays back where it was the biggest point drop ever in the history of the stock market. And then we had the highest number of percentage, increase in the history of the stock market. I read some, and then of course it dropped, and then it went up and it dropped. And basically what's happening is the Fed is pumping a lot of money into the system, but it's not working. That's the thing. It's not working. And so I read somewhere that someone put it out there that said the federal government shot off two silver bullets and it didn't do any good, right? It didn't work. And that's a scary thing to think about, is that the Fed is just dropping all this money, which is not going to be helpful in the long run. They're just trying to keep this all propped up. And so it's not just the stock market that we're looking at, but it's also going to be companies that aren't able to, their workers might not be coming in. So maybe they can't telecommute. They're not able to work from home. And so they can't, go in. Maybe, in places like, I don't know, in Washington or whatever, where they say it's kind of like a ghost town and people aren't going into work. Those companies that can afford it can pay their employees, but then you might have companies that say, I can't afford to pay you, I'm sorry. I mean, that's just the way it is. And so we're not firing you, but you can't come into work either. And so you have people that are not going to be able to earn money, and they're going to have issues, maybe paying their bills and all that kind of stuff. And we'll start to see that. Not to mention the fact that there's might be businesses that wind up closing down, not because they're locked down or anything like that, but maybe they're not able to get supplies from overseas. They're not able to get the things that they need from overseas to be able to sell. So there, it's kind of like, don't come into work, guys. We don't have anything to sell, or we can manage all this with a skeleton crew because we just don't have enough product to sell. And so those people, the economies for them, that's going to be wrecked, right? And so you have these things that start to compound on each other, and they start to really, they start to cause more problems. So this is just a bigger thing. Again, when people just say it's the flu, this is bigger than just the actual sickness that is happening. And there's going to be people out there, again, that as things start to ramp up, as things start to happen, people are going to panic. People, we are in uncharted territory, at least for this generation. Something like this hasn't happened since, the early 1900s. So there's not people around that remember what it was like in the Spanish flu, right? All we can do is read the history books and read, articles that people are putting out. We are in uncharted territory, and we are a very different civilization, a different society than what was happening back in the early 1900s. So there is this opportunity for us as preppers, as those of us who are self-reliant, to be able to help other people out there. And I want to talk a little bit about that. First thing is this, though. We need to make sure that we are preparing ourselves. And when I say preparing, I'm not talking about just gear. And I'm not talking about, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm talking about preparing ourselves physically. Maybe there is something to you need to start thinking about boosting your immune system. And one thing that I've been doing is I've been taking a lot more vitamin C. I take a multivitamin, and I take, you know, different things like that. But I've been really boosting my vitamin C. Like I said, pollen was really bad. I was feeling my throat was really scratchy yesterday, and I was feeling kind of just the allergies were just kicking my butt. And I started taking more vitamin C, and I think it really helped to the point where I was able to go to church, and I wasn't feeling any, you know, I wasn't feeling run down or anything like that. And so I was able to do my message and do the sermon and all that kind of stuff. So we need to make sure that we are boosting our immune system. When I say vitamin C, I'm not talking about the junk that you normally get at like a Walmart or whatever. I'm talking about trying to get some powdered vitamin C, some absorbic or absorbent vitamin C that's out there. Read the reviews. I posted some on Prepper website a while back, and I purchased some for myself, and that's what we're using for the family. And you can buy a 1 kilogram bag that's going to last you a lot. 1/4 of a teaspoon is like 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. So, you know, you can boost your immune system by doing that. There's other things you can do. I know that Kat Ellis talked a little bit about that in last week's episode, so you can go back and you can listen to that episode if you want to talk a little bit more, you want to research a little bit more about boosting your immune system. But at the very least, right now, what I'm doing is I'm adding more vitamin C to my drinking it in the morning, is what I'm saying. The other thing is we need to start eating better, because when we eat better, we are healthier, right? And one of the things about where we're at in society is we have so much processed food. We have so much junk out there running to McDonald's. And, you know, we're tired. It's been a long day of work, and we want to just run through and grab something to eat and then just veg out on the couch and watch TV. The thing is that all that processed food that we eat winds up causing inflammation in our bodies. And that's not good, to have all that inflammation. And we're just not healthy. And so eating fresh fruits and fresh vegetables as much as you can, I think that's important. One of the things that we could be doing this coming up year is, you know, for those of you, you might still have, you know, cooler weather. We're getting to the point where we can start putting things in the ground here in the Houston area. Is maybe you need to start gardening a little bit so you can supplement some of your fruits and vegetables, and you can have some really good stuff that you're growing at home. Maybe this is the time to start doing that. The other thing is, we need to make sure that we're prepared mentally, because we need to make sure that we keep our heads when all the stuff is going down. Because, you know, we see a lot, you know, most preppers, we're visiting, you know, places where we're seeing articles and we're reading articles and we're watching videos and we're listening to podcasts. We need to make sure that we keep our heads and that we don't freak out, right? We don't go crazy listening to all the stuff that is going on. And, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit more brain power to say, okay, I hear what they're saying. And so let's go ahead and make sure that, you know, I'm not freaking out. My reaction is not a freak out reaction. My reaction is one that's coming from, you know, being smart and thinking about this very critically and putting things and plans into place so you don't have to panic. You prepare so you don't have to panic. So we need to realize that there are going to be stressful times ahead, and we need to be prepared for that. And we need to realize that there's going to be other people, maybe our family members, that are not, maybe they're watching the news. Maybe they're seeing posts on Facebook and Twitter and other places like that, and they start to panic. And we need to make sure that we're in a good place to help them understand, wait a minute, you don't need to panic. We're prepared. Or you don't need to freak out. We've got this under control. We're just going to hang out here, hunker down, or whatever. We're going to try to minimize as much as possible going out there and being around big crowds and things like that, right? And so just making sure that we keep our heads and doing that. And so I've said it before, people are going to panic. And I think it's very important that we are there to help them to understand that they don't need to panic if they can put a little bit of preparedness in place. So it's easy to say out there, you know, for people that are ripping this out there on social media, the people that have been prepping for a long time. Well, if you just would have been prepared, if you just would have listened to me, I've been talking about this for years and no one listened to me. And now, ha, 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 now you're going to feel it. That is not the right way to do that, right? There are going to be people that are looking to know what to do. And here's the deal. This is the greatest time to be sharing about preparedness. I mean, you really have a nation that is paying attention. When we talk about, you know, helping other people understand why they need to prepare, a lot of the times we say, well, okay, hurricanes, you know, down here, those of us on the coast, or you know, those of you that are up north, you know, winter blizzards and tornadoes and helping, you know, a job loss and all that. But right now, we have a whole country that's going to be dealing with this, that's looking at this. And so this is a prime time to be able to talk to other people about preparedness. And that should be the prepper's response. The prepper's response should be one of being helpful and being kind and pointing people to the right places and being able to be understanding and helpful, that when they come to this place where they panic, that you're able to walk them off and back them off the cliff. Just like maybe you, I mean, maybe you came to preparedness because of a freak out. Maybe you read a book, maybe something happened in your life, or maybe you started researching something that triggered something and you freaked all out about it. And then you realized after a little bit, like, okay, wait a minute, I don't need to freak out about this. There's going to be a lot of people out there and you can help them. So let's talk a little bit about this. Let's talk a little bit about ways to promote preparedness during this time. I think it's very important to talk about practical preparedness. This is not the time to be talking about EMPs or polar shifts. This is not the time to be talking about the zombie apocalypse. This is not the time to talk about building bunkers or running out to the forest or bug out bags and your cabin in the mountains and all of that kind of stuff. I think what's important is to be very practical. And again, this is the way that I have been approaching it for the last couple of weeks with people, is I've been talking to them. It's smart to prepare for 2 to 4 weeks, maybe even longer if you can afford it, of hunkering down at home and food and hygiene items that if nothing happens, you are still going to be okay. Now listen, one of the things in preparedness that has been, and to be honest with you, I haven't seen so much about it lately, but back in the day, it was really bad and really rampant. And it's still out there, but the whole idea of OPSEC is like, hey, don't tell anybody what you have. Don't tell anybody, you know, don't tell anybody you're a prepper. Don't tell anybody you have extra food or water or anything else like that. And when the poop hits the fan, just turn off all your lights and, you know, cover up your windows and all of that. And I just never, to me, that doesn't make sense, because if you're in a true SHTF situation, you're going to need people. You're going to need people. That's just, it just boils down to it. I mean, I know we've had Fernando Furfall on here, Fernando Aguirre, who's talking about that and how people handle things in Argentina and how people gather and they protect each other, you know, and when there is a poop hit the fan situation. So when we talk about OPSEC, yeah, I don't think you need to go out and tell people, hey, I've got 2 years worth of food in my pantry or 2 years worth of food in my closets or whatever, and I've got, you know, guns galore and I have this and that. You don't need to do that. But some people, because they don't want to talk about things like that, they don't offer up the advice of putting away a little bit of supplies. You know, they don't offer up, it's like, I don't want anybody to know that I'm thinking that way. And I think that is the wrong way. But if you talk about practical preparedness, I think, you know, there are people out there that are saying this. Even people that aren't preppers, Liz Speck, the thread that I read from Twitter, she talked about it makes sense to prepare a little bit. She talked about rice and some black beans and you know, enough Robitussin to trip out. The thing is that I don't even think you need to go rice and beans. Just go buy stuff that you normally would buy. Make a menu. I've been saying that to everybody. Make a menu. So my second thing is this: give ideas to people of what they can do. And so what I've been telling people, again, like that person that I was sharing with you that goes to the grocery store every single day, they might not know how to operate without going to the store every single day. I know that's kind of crazy to think about, but you might need to give them some ideas. Like, look, sit down, make a menu of what your family likes to eat. Go to the, you know, write down the ingredients of what you need for 2 weeks. Go to the store and double that, those ingredients. And then all of a sudden you have a month's worth of food right there. And we're not talking about going out and buying dehydrated or freeze-dried food. We're not talking about making food buckets. We're not talking about any of that, you know, eating rice and beans. We're talking about eating regular food that you get at the grocery store that everybody eats that you would normally feed your family. And so give people ideas of what they can do. Again, the food thing, the hygiene items, and you're prefacing with this is like you're saying, even if you don't need it, I mean, it's better to have it, but if you don't need it, you're still going to use it anyway. The best case scenario is, let's say it that way, best case scenario is you don't have to go to the grocery store for a month. And best case scenario, you don't have to buy hygiene items. You don't have to buy those things for a month, all right? You're good. You're good. And so you're going to use it. Maybe you're giving people ideas about social distancing. Now, it's crazy to me, but I know people that are taking trips right now. Like I said, we're on spring break. There are people that are going on cruises that I know right now. And I just can't, with all the stuff that's going on, I mean, yeah, you might be really lucky and you might get to be on this cruise and no one has any issues and you have a great time. I know people that have gone to Disney World and people that are going and taking, you know, that are traveling. And I can understand, like, hey, we've had these plans for a long time and we don't want to let down everybody. But you know what? I know some of these people have older family members as well. And I would just really be sick into my stomach to think that I would go get something and bring it back to my family. And so we're practicing a little bit of social distancing right now. We're, you know, kind of staying at home. We're not freaking out about it. You know, we're going to church. If we need to go to the grocery store, we'll go to the grocery store. If we need to, you know, do something like that, we'll do it. We're very careful. I mean, when I've been going to work this week, I've been hitting my hands with hand sanitizer and I have wipes and all that kind of stuff. I've been trying to be very careful about that, but I guess I'm purposefully being careful about what I do. I'm not going to a movie theater. I'm not going to go to the mall and just walk around, which I never do anyway, but just giving you examples. I'm not going to go to the rodeo and things like that. I think another thing of giving people ideas of what they can do is just to stay informed of what is happening out there. There's a lot of people that just, they have no clue of what is going on or how bad it is or how severe it is. And I created resources over at Prepared Christians. I have a page on coronavirus for preppers. And as I find things, I'll add them to it. But there's just some maps and charts and other resources on there. Again, the two videos, the two people that I recommend, Dr. John Campbell and Chris Martinson from Peak Prosperity, their videos are embedded in that link. And so the link is going to be in the show notes. And the way that the link is set up is you get the most recent video from them. And so if, you know, they put out a new video, boom, you get the most recent video. And so that way you don't have to go searching around. So I just really tried to find a way to, you know, provide a lot of information, but tell people to stay informed and to let them, you know, give them that idea. Just, hey, be paying attention to what's going on out there. And then give the ability to share information, like as if things start to really go sideways and people are out there and like people like, I can't find Clorox. I'm not worried about stuff like that. But if people are out there freaking out, you need to clean your home. You can use some vinegar and maybe not, it's not going to disinfect like Clorox might, but you can use vinegar and you can make household items that way. Maybe people are wanting to cook at home, but they're like, I ran out of eggs or I ran out of milk. What do I do? And maybe you can give them some food substitutes out there. Instead of that, do you have this? You might be able to use this, right? Or, hey, just forego the eggs and use a little bit more oil or whatever. But maybe you can give a little bit of some ideas. And people are like, how do you know that? You know, it's just, well, because I've just been researching substitutes that we can have for food storage or whatever. And so you have that information. Maybe those articles like, 100 uses for baking soda. Maybe those would be very helpful, right? When people get a little bit of baking soda out there, and there's a lot of different things that you can use for people who don't stock up on hygiene items and they run out of toothpaste and then they're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Well, do you have some baking soda? Yeah, you can use baking soda. Just know that it's not going to, you know, freshen your breath, but it's going to clean your teeth like you need it to. Here's the other thing. Be ready to listen to other people and be the voice of reason. We're so ready to give our own two cents all the time. Well, I mean, what people really need sometimes is just people to be there and to listen. I'm thinking about this one administrator that I was talking to one time, and she said, I stopped coming home and telling my husband what went on that day, because he was always trying to fix it and he was trying to give me pointers and different things, and that's not really what I needed. What I wanted him to do is just listen to my day. And so I just stopped telling him how things were going on. And so there's a lot of people out there that just need someone to listen to them and be a sounding board. And so I think that's one thing that we can be very helpful. I think that's not necessarily preparedness or self-reliance. That's just being a good person out there and being there for other people. So be ready to just be there and listen. And then here's this last thing here. Help those in need. If you can, put a little bit of extra aside. Now, I know that this is going to be tricky. I know that people are going to be like, Todd, let me tell you, I have read plenty of articles and I have linked to plenty of articles on Prepper website with this mentality. I have prepped, I have told other people to prep, and if they don't prep, it's their fault and I'm not going to, help them out in a time of need, because I have prepped, I've spent a lot of money on my own preps for my own family, and while they lived high on the horse, right? I completely, completely understand that. I really do. But here's the thing. We have this opportunity that if we can put something back, we can help those people in need. Think about how appreciative they would be. Think about how much favor you can earn with them when you are able to give. And I'm not saying you do it to earn favor, but I'm just saying that, if someone didn't have some toilet paper, right? Going back to the TP thing, there's been so many things that I've seen let go and right and left on the whole toilet paper thing. Let's not even use toilet paper. Let's use toothpaste. Let's say someone needed some toothpaste and they didn't have any toothpaste, and you're able to share with them because you have some samples that you have gathered throughout the years or from going to the dentist, right? And so you're not really using your stockpile, but you have some extras and you're able to give them to them and like, hey, I've got some extra samples here that I can give you. And think about how appreciative they would be of that. And so if you can, again, this is tricky. I know there's a lot of preppers that are going to hear this and you're like, no, Todd, forget that. But I think that if you can be in that position where you can put a little bit of extra aside to help other people, I think that is a good place to be. And there's always the concern, Todd, they'll keep coming back. Well, you deal with that just like you would deal with anything else. Just like you deal with a family member who keeps coming back for money. You deal with a family member who, sometimes we think, oh my gosh, this is it. This is the zombie apocalypse. They're going to come back and they're going to, if I don't give them, anything extra, they're going to attack my home. And so I'm not saying you have to do this, but I'm saying if you can put something back, put it back. More than likely, anybody that comes to you and is approaching you for some help is going to be someone that you know. And because this isn't the zombie apocalypse, because this is the coronavirus and all the issues that we're going to be dealing with, eventually things will get back to normal, or it might be a new normal or whatever. You're still going to be dealing with these people. So whatever you can do to help out would be very appreciative. And so I just are appreciated. And so I'm just kind of throwing that out there. So I really do think that as preppers, or those of us who think and espouse self-reliance, that we really have a great opportunity in this time to spotlight the real benefits of being prepared. And so there are family members that that you can remind and say, you know, we're getting close. There's a lot of people that are saying, like, we've passed the Rubicon. That's it. We've gotten past the point of preparedness. And I understand that idea, but there's still a lot of time out there for other people who don't have anything, and they are going to the store. And so I don't want to poo-poo on their whole need to have to be prepared and to be able to go to the store. And so we have family that we can talk to about being prepared and just saying, look, guys, just look at what's going on over in California and that stuff right now that's going on, like the Costco, the long lines that are out the door before the store even opens. That's very possible that will happen in our area too, when the coronavirus, when the numbers start going up and people start seeing it. So does it make sense to have a little bit of extra food? And saying that to family, saying that to your friends, maybe saying that to coworkers that are out there and being able to say, look, I'm concerned about you. I don't want to look like a crazy person, but I'm concerned because if something really happened and I didn't say anything, I would feel really bad that I could have helped you and I didn't say anything because I was worried that I would be looked at as a whack job, right? And then on social media is the worst because you have everybody is just out there just banging away and you know, saying all kinds of different things. Try to be the voice of reason out there. Try to be, you know, someone who's just practical preparedness. And we don't need to get in there and shouting matches, you know, online shouting matches with other people. We don't need to be like, you're wrong, you're stupid, you're this. Just talk about it from that practical standpoint, maybe on your own feed. Maybe like, hey guys, this is a great idea here. You know, maybe think about this. And you can just share out those types of things and help other people who might be panicked. Like, look, you don't need to be panicked about this. Let's just get informed. Don't get crazy about it. Get informed and be prepared. And you don't have to panic. And that's where it really is. And so we have this great opportunity to spotlight the real benefits of preparedness. And I hope that the preparedness community rises to the challenge, that we shine in this moment to let other people, so that when we let other people know, so that when we come out of this on the other side, people realize, you know what, it is smart to be prepared. It is smart to be to have some supplies at home. It is smart to have a plan put in place. It just makes sense. All right, there you go. That's it for this episode. I hope that it has been very helpful for you. I'd appreciate any feedback that you can give me. You can come over to episode 626 over at theprepperwebsitepodcast.com, and we can continue the conversation there. Or you can always email me. I make it very easy for you to come over to the website, though, with a link in the show notes. Well, everyone, that's it for episode 626. Hey, to subscribe to the show, make sure you click the subscribe button in your favorite podcast app or head on over to theprepperwebsitepodcast.com. And that way you never miss another episode of Sweet Prepper Goodness. And don't forget, if you're looking for more preparedness and self-reliant information, head over to prepperwebsite.com, where we link to 8 to 12 articles every day of the very best self-reliant articles out there. We also have pages dedicated to alternative news, firearms, DIY, Bible prophecy, frugal living, and homesteading. And lastly, don't forget to join the email list if you haven't. When you do, I'm going to send you a free PDF on the 25 handpicked preparedness articles that you should read. And some of those articles aren't even available on the internet any longer. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until next week, stay prepped and aware. Peace.